blocks are three, and then he has a way of translating AFW into three numbers.
After hours of trial and error and pages of scribbling, Professor David McMullen cracked it. He worked out that the code was hidden in the first letters of the words John wrote, but it was much...
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Zeb Soans. Good evening. Six Islamic extremists have pleaded guilty to plotting a terrorist attack on an English Defence League rally in West Yorkshire last summer. The police and security services had no intelligence about the plot, and the men were caught only because their car was uninsured. A former lifeguard has gone on trial accused of murdering April Jones, the five-year-old girl from Powers whose body has never been found. The prosecution said that blood had been discovered in the home of Mark Bridger and that he was guilty of a sexually motivated attack. A woman from North Wales has been convicted of murdering five members of a family who lived in her block of flats. President Obama has said he'll again try to close the prison in Guantanamo Bay. Also tonight, the Lions rugby union squad is announced with contrasting fortunes for the captains of Wales and England. Six men from Birmingham have admitted planning a terrorist attack on an English Defence League rally in West Yorkshire last June, which police said would have caused mayhem had it been successful. The group intended to detonate a homemade bomb at the march in Dewsbury. The plot was foiled because the would-be attackers turned up after the rally had finished. The men were caught by chance, leaving the town when their car was stopped for having no insurance. Dominic Casciani is at Woolwich Crown Court.
When six men planned to bomb the EDL demonstration in Dewsbury, it was sheer good fortune that the day didn't end in a bloodbath, and it was pure chance they were caught. Omar Khan, Jewel Adin, Zohaib Ahmed, Mohammed Saud and Anzal Hussein left Birmingham with a bootload of weapons, including a homemade bomb. Another man, Mohammed Hussein, had helped, but didn't travel. Ahead of the rally, local Muslims appealed for calm, but the Birmingham group had even packed sawn-off shotguns, knives and swords. Aziz Darji is a Muslim community leader in Dewsbury.
I think we could have seen scenes of almost massacre. You know, lots of people could have been hurt, injured, possibly killed as well. And there would be no discrimination. It could be young people, older people, black, white, Asian, etc. So anybody could have been affected by that.
The police only know about the plot thanks to a traffic officer. He impounded the vehicle carrying the weapons after stopping it on the M1 for having no insurance. The men were allowed to return to Birmingham on a train, and the car wasn't searched for 2 days. When the boot was eventually opened, its contents triggered a manhunt. As well as the weapons, the police found leaflets denouncing the EDL and the Queen as enemies of Allah. But two of the six were known to police. One had been under surveillance because he was an associate of three men jailed last week for wanting to be suicide bombers. Marcus Beale is Assistant Chief Constable of West Midlands Police. He defended his officers and MI5, saying they had acted properly.
I'm really, really comfortable that within both my own organisation and in partner organisations, we didn't fail to join the dots.
The men will return to court in June, where they face possible life sentences.
This latest foiled attack has raised questions about the nature of the terrorist threat in the UK. 17 men from Birmingham have been convicted of major terrorist offences since February. More than half of them have been directly involved in making bombs. Our security correspondent Frank Gardner has been analysing the scale of the threat.
No one is yet daring to suggest the era of big 9/11 scale jihadist terror plots is over, but there is one characteristic that marks out nearly all recent terrorist convictions in Britain, the self-starter. Of the 145 people convicted of terrorism offences in Britain between 2001 and 2012, government officials say an ever-increasing number have become radicalised here and decided to carry out an attack without any formal direction from Al-Qaeda's leadership. This is in contrast to the earlier massive plots, like the 2006 liquid bomb plot to blow up several airliners over the Atlantic. Raffaello Pantucci is an author and terrorism expert at the Whitehall think tank RUSI.
Increasingly we're seeing, as in the recent Birmingham case that concluded, the guys had made the connections, they'd received the training, but they were very much sent back to go carry out some sort of plot by themselves, and there was no operational command and control.
Many of those caught and convicted have embarked on the road to violence by reading inflammatory material online. discussing it on internet chat forums, or by reading Al-Qaeda's online magazine, Inspire. Last summer, Jonathan Evans, the previous Director General of the Security Service, MI5, said, in backrooms and in cars and on the streets of this country, there is no shortage of individuals talking about wanting to mount terrorist attacks here. Often these would-be jihadists then make their own way to Pakistan's tribal territories, hoping to get military training from charismatic leaders. Sometimes it ends in disappointment and failure, but officials warn against any complacency. They say just because plots are amateurish, that does not stop them posing a serious risk to British lives.
A jury has been told that child pornography was found on the computer of a man accused of abducting and murdering a 5-year-old girl. Mark Bridger denies killing April Jones, who was last seen playing near her home at McCunthliffe in Powys last October. The prosecutor at Mold Crown Court said Mark Bridger seemed to have had a sexual motive. The body of April Jones has not been found, despite weeks of searching by hundreds of volunteers. From Mold, our correspondent Hull Griffith was in court.
April Jones's disappearance on October the 1st last year triggered the largest search in British policing history. Today, the man charged with her abduction, murder and concealment of her body arrived in court to stand trial. Mark Bridger's actions were, according to the prosecution, sexually motivated. His computer held hundreds of indecent images of children and other folders containing clothed photos of local girls, including April and her half-sisters. A search of his home found bloodstains which match April's DNA, and in the ashes of the fireplace, forensic teams found what are thought to be fragments of a child's skull. The jury was told Mark Bridger denies the three charges against him, saying he accidentally ran over April before putting her into his Land Rover. He told police that his recollection of what followed is blank. The prosecuting barrister said he was playing a cruel game in order to save himself. The 47-year-old wept as a recording of the 999 call reporting April's disappearance was played in court. Her mother's voice could be heard pleading somebody's kidnapped April. As he sent them home for the day, the judge warned the jury that they must not rush to any conclusions. The trial is expected to last for 6 weeks.
A woman has been found guilty of murdering 5 members of the same family, including 3 children, by deliberately starting a fire at the block of flats in Prestatyn in North Wales. Mold Crown Court was told that Menelly Smith, who lived in the flat below the victims, set light to a pushchair because she was angry that it had been left in a shared hallway. Our correspondent, John Brain, was in court.
Melanie Smith never tried to hide her contempt for the young family who lived in the flat above her. She was particularly angry at their habit of leaving a child's pushchair in the communal hallway. One night last October, she set it alight. Leanna Shires, her partner Liam Trimble, and their 15-month-old son Charlie were trapped as the fire took hold. They died along with her 4-year-old nephew Bailey and her niece Skye, who was 2. Smith had earlier been heard telling Miss Shires, "I'm going to set your home on fire with you and your kids in it." Outside the court, the children's grandmother, Joy Shires, said her family would never get over what had happened.
"Not only have they took my daughter, my grandchildren, they took my best friend. They've took our way of life. She took a lot of stuff away from us, not just them."
Smith, who had a history of violent and drunken behaviour, was also convicted of threatening to burn down another woman's home. As the verdicts were announced, she slumped in the dock and sobbed. She'll be sentenced next week.
A Spanish doctor accused of running one of the largest doping rings in sport has been given a 1-year suspended jail sentence by a court in Madrid. Eufemiano Fuentes was found guilty of endangering the lives of several professional cyclists by giving them blood transfusions to boost their performance. The judge ordered that evidence in the case should be destroyed, a decision criticised by the UK anti-doping organisation, which said it would prevent Fuentes' links with other sports being investigated. Tom Burridge reports from Madrid.
When Spanish police raided the offices of Dr. Eufemiano Fuentes back in 2006, they seized around 200 bags of frozen blood and plasma, as well as a large quantity of performance-enhancing drugs. The bags had code names on them relating to the athletes who were part of his alleged doping ring. When the raids took place, doping was not a criminal offence in Spain, so Dr. Fuentes was charged with endangering the health of his patients. Today he was found guilty and given a one-year suspended sentence, struck off as a sports doctor for 4 years, and ordered to pay a fine of €15 every day for the next 10 months. Dr. Fuentes' trial only heard evidence linking him to cyclists. However, both the Spanish and the World Anti-Doping Agencies believe the bags of blood seized by the police in 2006 were those of athletes from several sports. The judge today ruled that the evidence should be destroyed, but the head of Spain's anti-doping agency, Ana Muñoz, said she will appeal that decision, so that all of the evidence seized by the police is handed over to her organisation.
My agency does not consider this as the end of the process, and we will now use all the resources at our disposal to investigate further.
If Spain's anti-doping agency is to discover the true extent of Dr. Fuentes' alleged doping network, they'll need him to cooperate, and perhaps to reveal the names of other sports people involved.
President Obama has said he will make a renewed attempt to close the Guantanamo Bay detention center in Cuba, where prisoners are staging a mass hunger strike in protest at being held indefinitely without trial. He told a White House news conference that he did not want any prisoners to die and called on Congress to help him find a long-term legal solution to the problem. There have been protests inside the camp before, but as our correspondent Jonathan Beale reports, this is one of the longest and most widespread.
100 of the 166 men still being held in Guantanamo have now joined the hunger strike. 21 of those are being force-fed by a tube inserted through their nose. Hence the decision to send an additional 40 medical staff to the military base on the southern tip of Cuba. The protest began in early February when guards searched cells and confiscated items. Prisoners claimed that copies of the Quran were desecrated. But lawyers representing them also say it's as much a cry for help after being left locked up in legal limbo for years. When he first came to power, President Obama promised to close down Guantanamo within a year. 5 years on, with the backdrop of this mass protest, he says it's now time to try again.
The idea that we would still maintain forever a group of individuals who have not been tried, that is contrary to who we are, it is contrary to our interests, and it needs to stop. I'm going to go back at it, because I think it's important.
But he did not explain how he'd persuade Congress to back his plans to close down Guantanamo. Democrats and Republicans have already rejected his proposal to transfer terrorist suspects from Guantanamo to the US mainland to be tried in federal courts.
The authorities in Syria say at least 14 people have been killed and more than 100 have been wounded in an explosion in the capital, Damascus. Tensions are high in the region after yesterday's attempted assassination of the Syrian Prime Minister, Wael al-Haliki. Our correspondent Jim Muir is monitoring developments from Lebanon.
Fire engines and ambulances were quickly on the scene of the explosion, a busy street near a big commercial centre, a hotel and an interior ministry building. Shots were heard ringing out through streets shrouded in dense smoke, though it didn't seem to be an exchange of fire. The explosion wrecked and set ablaze many cars, blew the windows out of buildings all around. Syrian state TV showed a number of bodies lying in the debris as the wounded were carried away. Among those first on the scene was the Interior Minister, Mohammed Shaar. He said that it was the outside masters of what he called the armed terrorist groups who benefited from such attacks, with Israel as the first beneficiary. This has for long been the regime's main line, that what it's facing is not a popular uprising, but externally driven terrorism aimed at undermining a state which has consistently opposed Israel. Activist groups accused the regime itself of carrying out the bombing precisely to reinforce that argument. Whatever the case, this second bomb in 2 days in the centre of Damascus is an ominous escalation, carrying the message to residents of the city centre that now nowhere is safe.
Police in Greater Manchester are searching for two men who were freed from a prison van by a gang in balaclavas in Salford. Stevie McMullen, who's 31, and 20-year-old Ryan McDonald were being driven to Manchester Crown Court this morning for sentencing for offences including robbery, possession of a firearm, conspiracy to kidnap and conspiracy to commit arson. A woman has been arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender. Chief Superintendent Kevin Mulligan from Greater Manchester Police has appealed to anyone who sees the men to call them immediately.
I am concerned about them being on the loose. I don't think they pose a risk unless approached. So it's really important that if anyone sees them, they contact us straight away. We have got a major investigation in place. We've got increased police presence in the area. And a major investigation is ongoing to recover these people back into custody.
You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on BBC Radio 4. The main news so far. Six Islamic extremists from Birmingham have admitted planning a terrorist attack on a march organised by the English Defence League in West Yorkshire last June. The trial of the man accused of murdering 5-year-old April Jones in Mid Wales last October has been told that blood matching her DNA was found in his house. Still to come.
121 becomes APS.
Unlocking the secrets of a prisoner of war's code. The Association of Chief Police Officers has defended the use of so-called restorative justice to deal with thousands of cases of serious violence last year. Instead of prosecuting or cautioning those responsible, more than 10,000 offenders in England and Wales were given informal punishments, even though guidelines say these should only be used for low-level crime. Here's our Home Affairs correspondent, Danny Shaw.
As part of a community resolution, an offender apologises to the victim, pays compensation and repairs any damage caused. A crime is recorded, but the offender does not get a criminal record. ACPO guidelines say community resolutions are suitable for low-level offences, including assaults where no one is injured. But the number of cases in which they've been used for serious violence, such as wounding and grievous bodily harm, has gone up 12-fold in the past 5 years to 10,160. Assistant Chief Constable Gary Shewan, representing ACPO, said it may be necessary and appropriate for the scheme, sometimes referred to as restorative justice, to be used in such cases, even if it went against the guidelines.
If you use good restorative justice to deal with a crime, we know that victims feel far better about that. They've got a voice, they've had an opportunity to ask questions. They are at the heart of the decision making. Now, that's far more effective than a caution. It's far more effective than taking no further action.
Last year, there were more than 2,400 incidents of domestic violence where restorative justice was used in place of a prosecution or caution, sparking concern from a former chief constable who pioneered the approach. Peter Nehru said it was never intended to be used in domestic abuse cases where there may be doubts about whether the offender has offered a genuine apology and if the victim has freely agreed to accept it.
Israel says it has killed a senior Palestinian militant who was attacked by aircraft while riding a motorcycle in Gaza. Officials say the dead man was Haitham Mashal, who they claim was part of a group inspired by Al-Qaeda. He's the first person killed in an airstrike in Gaza since a truce was agreed in November. In the West Bank, an Israeli settler was stabbed to death by a Palestinian, the first such killing in the territory in more than a year. The UKIP candidate, who's been suspended from the party because of a photograph apparently showing him making a Nazi salute, has insisted it is not what it seems. Alex Wood claims he's reaching for a friend's phone in the picture. He also says his Facebook page was hijacked and statements about African people were added. UKIP's leader, Nigel Farage, has threatened to expel Mr. Wood if there is evidence he holds extremist views. But Mr. Wood says the claims are completely untrue.
The supposed salute was my left hand reaching for my friend's mobile phone. My Facebook account has been hacked. This matter is being dealt with by the police. I see myself as a democratic libertarian, racist, homophobic, fascist views absolutely disgust me. So, you know, these statements are not mine.
Police have released the names of a man and a woman found dead in a swimming pool at a hotel in Essex. 22-year-old Josephine Fodé from South London had been celebrating her birthday at the Down Hall Country House Hotel in Hatfield Heath. She was found floating face down in the water on Saturday evening, along with Komba Pakiwa, who was 31 and from Erith in Kent. Five men who invested in the film industry are to face prosecution, accused of conspiring to cheat the tax system. The Crown Prosecution Service says the men made use of a measure designed to stimulate British filmmaking in order to pay less in tax. The prosecutors believe their actions cost the state around £125 million. Our business correspondent, Jonty Bloom, reports.
Film industry tax relief was introduced in 2007 to encourage filmmaking in this country and has ensured that hundreds of productions, including such hits as Skyfall and Les Miserables, have been made in the UK. The relief enables companies to claim back part of the cost of production in the UK, and if a film loses money, to offset that against other tax liabilities. But like many other tax incentives, it has also been marketed, quite legally, as a way of reducing the tax bills of rich investors. The allegation in this case is that the tax relief was abused and dishonestly marketed for almost a decade. The prosecution will allege that the level of losses that investors could claim tax relief on was falsified, investors were defrauded, and the taxman was cheated of around £125 million. The five defendants, Keith Haley, Robert Bevan, Charles Saville, Cyril Megrae and Norman Layton, will appear before Birmingham Magistrates Court in June.
In the city, the 100 share index closed down 28 points at 6,430. On Wall Street, a short time ago, the Dow Jones was 15 points lower at 14,803. On the currency markets, the pound was up just over half a cent against the dollar at $1.56. And against the euro, it was down half a cent at €1.18, and that makes a euro worth 85 pence. Sussex Police has become the first force in Britain to issue electronic tracking devices to people suffering from dementia. Searching for dementia patients who can go missing can cost thousands of pounds. The scheme is being piloted in the Chichester area, from where Duncan Kennedy reports.
Emergency response, Louise speaking.
The call centre in Chichester, where the tracking devices connect to. People with dementia trigger the gadgets, which are the size of a cigarette packet, when they become lost or disorientated. Bernard Stoneham's wife, Jill, used hers after recently going missing in fields near her home.
I spotted her at the entrance to another field where there'd been cattle. A dip in the ground was full of mud and water, and she got stuck in this mud. And to be frank, without the GPS device, I would never have known where to look for her.
Now, Sussex Police have become the first force in Britain to buy several of the tracking devices to issue to high-risk dementia residents in their area. Chief Inspector Tanya Jones says the aim is to avoid using expensive helicopters and police officers to find missing dementia sufferers.
The GPS will be very cost-effective to the police, reduce the anxiety to the family, and really reduce the amount of police time that's spent on this issue.
The devices cost about £120 each. With 800,000 people in Britain now diagnosed with dementia, several other forces are watching to see if this experiment in policing meets caring really works.
The Netherlands has its first king in more than a century. Willem-Alexander was sworn in at a ceremony in Amsterdam. The king paid tribute to his mother, Queen Beatrix, who formally gave up the throne this morning, ending a reign of 33 years. Our Europe correspondent, Matthew Price, joined the crowd celebrating in the Dutch capital.
Thank you, Bea, they chanted as Queen, now Princess Beatrix, stepped out onto the palace balcony. By her side, her son and king, Willem-Alexander, and his wife, now Queen Maxima, an Argentinian-born investment banker. The crowd applauded.
Yeah, I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime, and for me that was the reason why I wanted to stand here today.
Willem-Alexander is the first Dutch king in over a century. Royal succession here does not depend on gender. His mother's reign ended with little ceremony. Queen Beatrix simply signed the document of abdication. There was more pomp for the inauguration. In the audience, Prince Charles, another king in waiting, almost 20 years older than his Dutch counterpart. Queen Beatrix decided it was time for a new generation. This was King Willem-Alexander's message to his people.
Our strength is not in working in isolation, but working together. As a family, as friends, as inhabitants of a street or of a neighbourhood, as citizens of our kingdom.
This evening, there'll be a royal pageant on the river in this city built on water, and later, a state dinner to round off an historic day.
The honorary president of football's world governing body, FIFA, has resigned after being accused of taking bribes. A report by FIFA's ethics committee found that Yao Havelange, who's 96 and from Brazil, and two other former executives received up to £14 million between 1992 and 2000. A scandal involving the collapsed marketing agency ISL.
Here's our sports editor, David Bond.
FIFA's Swiss marketing partners, ISL, collapsed in 2001, owing millions of pounds to creditors. More than a decade later, world football's governing body is still trying to clear up the mess. Today's report by the Ethics Committee chairman, Judge Hans-Joachim Eckert, names three senior FIFA officials who took bribes from ISL in return for their help in securing lucrative World Cup TV rights. Former President João Havelange and Brazilian Football Federation chief Ricardo Teixeira had already been named in Swiss court documents for accepting so-called commissions from ISL. They quit their most senior positions in football months ago, and today it was revealed Havelange had stood down from his one remaining post in the game as honorary FIFA president. Nicolas Leos of Paraguay became the third official to be linked to the affair, but again he jumped before he was pushed, resigning as president of South American football last week, ahead of the report's publication. While there is criticism from Judge Eckert of President Sepp Blatter's conduct, he is cleared of any involvement in the corrupt payments. He will now press on with plans to clean up FIFA. But many think that until Mr. Blatter goes, the disgraced body can't move on from its dirty past.
Rugby and Sam Warburton of Wales will captain the British Lions Tour of Australia. 14 of his Welsh teammates from the side that won the Six Nations Championship will join him in the squad, but Johnny Wilkinson will not have a final opportunity to display his skills on an international stage. Two Irish veterans, Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll, will give backbone to the squad chosen by the coach Warren Gatland. But there was no place for Chris Robshaw, the captain of England. Our rugby correspondent Ian Robertson considers the choices made.
It was always likely that Warren Gatland would choose his own Welsh captain, Sam Warburton, to lead the 2013 Lions. But it must have been hard to overlook the claims of both Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll, who have been on Lions tours and fully understand their special ethos and traditions. Nevertheless, Warburton has been an outstanding captain of Wales, and Gatland is confident he's the right man for the job.
Sam Warburton, since the World Cup, has captain Wales. He's been the most successful captain in terms of the Welsh team over the last couple of years. He's a fantastic young man, great professional. You know, Sam will lead this team with the full support of some older, experienced players who've done the job as well.
There's no doubt Warburton will be a very popular captain, and the overall makeup of the squad is very much as expected, apart from the choice of only two fly halves. That seems to be a huge risk. If either or both Jonathan Sexton and Owen Farrell were injured, the Lions would have a major problem. The inclusion of Johnny Wilkinson would have eased that pressure, but this is still a very strong Lions party, comprising 15 Welsh, 10 English, 9 Irish and 3 Scots, and the Lions have an excellent chance of winning the three-test series against Australia.
The Broadway version of the hit West End musical Matilda has received 12 nominations in the American Theatre Awards, the Tonys. Matilda is shortlisted for Best Director, Best Choreography and Best Orchestration. A secret wartime code hidden in letters written by a British soldier after he was captured by the Nazis has been deciphered by a maths professor at Plymouth University. The letters sent by John Pryor to his parents 70 years ago contained secret messages for the military authorities in the UK. Now the code has been cracked, the Pryor family can at last understand the contents, as John Kay reports.
Page after page, handwritten in pencil, sent by John Pryor when he was a young prisoner of war. But when John died in Cornwall 2 years ago, his son Stephen assumed that the secret code hidden in the letters had died with him.
We were stuck. We knew there were coded letters, but we didn't know how to get at them. And we didn't really know where to turn.
121 becomes A, P, S.
It was David McMullen, Professor of Mathematics at Plymouth University, who finally cracked the code. He worked out that John Pryor had memorised a complex grid of letters and numbers which allowed him to hide information about German military targets in sentences that appeared rather bland.
I think this code was about as good as you could get given the limited resources the prisoners of war had. But it's a very sophisticated method that obviously was very successful.
321 is C.
Second letter
S-C, scuttled. Yeah. Scuttled.
When the letters reached England in the 1940s, they were decoded by secret agents before being passed on to the Prior family. Now the family can finally understand them.
It was pretty amazing. It was like opening a hidden treasure.
Stephen Prior is now in the process of decoding all 20 of his father's secret letters.
The headlines again. Six men from Birmingham have admitted travelling to West Yorkshire with weapons to attack an English Defence League rally. The trial has started of a man who denies abducting and murdering a five-year-old girl at McCuntleth in Powys last October. A woman has been found guilty of murdering five members of the same family in her block of flats. A Spanish court has imposed a suspended jail sentence on a sports doctor accused of running an extensive doping ring. President Obama has said he'll again try to close the prison in Guantanamo Bay. An explosion in the Syrian capital has killed at least 14 people. BBC News.